Some years ago, I heard a story. It's about a conversation between a Catholic and a Muslim, where the Catholic person was trying to explain to the Muslim about our belief in the Eucharist. And they used all the best arguments, explanations of theology, philosophy, about how, as Catholics, we believe that a piece of bread becomes the physical presence of Jesus Christ. Truly amazing thing. And then this person was passionate, you know, explaining their faith. And the Muslim man just stood there and shook his head and said, "Can't be true." He said, "Why can't it be true? God can do anything. God's the God of miracles. Why could you possibly not believe this?" And basically the Muslim man said, "Because of you." He said, "Let me explain. Like, if as a Muslim, if I was told that God was physically present in a room, I would run there straight away and I would never leave. I would spend every moment of my life flat on my face in absolute worship of that God. I don't care about your arguments. The very fact that you're not there says that it's not true." It's a very confronting story. You know, to be honest, I was kind of struggling what to preach about tonight, because I'm looking at this reading, it's like, as a congregation, you've heard so much about prayer, you've heard so much about salvation, you've heard so much over the years. Anything I say is just going to go in one ear and out the other. At least that's how I listen to homilies. I don't know about you. Sorry to the priest behind me. But I think at some point we actually need to stop and look at it in that really stark contrast of, what if this is actually real? You know, we've got this story here of Martha and Mary. And once again, down through the history of the church, so much has been said and written about who was in the right and who was in the wrong. Was it Martha who was right, or was it Mary who was right? But basically, at the end of the day, the fact is that Jesus is there. God, the living God, the God of the universe, is physically present in that room, and we have this contrast of how two people respond to it. One is so busy trying to get the food prepared, whereas the other one is absolutely caught up in rapture at his feet. And ever since this story has been told, it's been this challenge to us of, where do we stand in this story? Yeah, because the reality is that God is here. Where do we stand? You know, even now, do you find yourself wrapped in absolute contemplation of the fact that God is present here in the church? That we are here in the Holy of Holies. We have an access to God greater than any of the prophets of the Old Testament. They would have died for the privilege that we have here now. And yet in reality, most of us are here like, "I hope this finishes soon. Really like to get home and watch some television." But it's a really important thing to say, well, what's the state of our heart here? You know, for us as Catholics who have received so much grace, you know, even our other Christian brothers and sisters in other churches have not received the same grace that we receive here in the sacraments. And yet, sadly, our hearts can be so cold. We're just asleep. You know, how do we respond to what is in front of us? As an interesting contrast to this, in the second reading, we've got St. Paul speaking passionately, as Paul always speaks. He says, "It makes me happy to suffer for you as I'm suffering now, and in my body to do what I can to make up all that has still to be undergone by Christ for the sake of his body." Paul's there saying, "I am so happy to suffer for you." When was the last time you said that? When was the last time you said that for your husband or your wife or your children? "I'm really happy to suffer for you." And I think if we spent more time saying that rather than complaining about them, stuff might actually happen. But once again, this says something about the state of our hearts. Our hearts can be so asleep. You know, we are living in a world which has trained us from birth that it's all about entertainment. It's all about this moment now. Are you happy? If you're not happy, your life is meaningless. You know, so if there's a problem, run away from it. Escape. If there's conflict, run away. Always try and just find the easiest path. The scriptures tell us something very different. You know, Jesus himself says the easy path is not the one you want to go down because it's leading to the wrong place. It's the narrow path, the hard path, which actually leads us to eternal life. That's the path of love. Everyone loves this idea of love. You know, and we always still have these nice sentimental songs of like, all we need is love. You know, if only we could just love each other, the world would get along. But there's a really good reason why no one does that, because it is extremely painful. It hurts. Because to really love means, to put it bluntly, to die. That's why the crucifix is the symbol of Christianity, because it is the symbol of what love actually leads us to. It means that I'm not living for myself anymore, I'm living for someone else. That I am not God. I am not the one wanting to be worshipped. Now, that's a very hard thing to get over. You know, we've got a world of 7 billion people all wanting to be worshipped, and this is why we're not getting along so well. Because even when I am loving, supposedly, I'm so often doing it so that people will worship me and think, oh, isn't he a saint? Isn't he wonderful? But real genuine love is when I'm prepared to actually lay down my life, to really sacrifice myself. To really start to fight for other people rather than fighting with them. You know, to actually say, well, okay, there's a problem in your marriage. Sacrifice, you know. Get on your knees and pray for them. You know, all that pain and hardship in your life, instead of trying to medicate it, turn it into a prayer. Hold it up for the sake of the person you love. Instead of sitting around the dinner table complaining about the state of the world, let's actually start doing something about it. You know, as a church, we can be so passive. And I think, sadly, we've been trained into this idea of we're just children. We can't do anything. God's got to fix it. We're just helpless. But instead, the reality is that you have been entrusted with a grace that says you have this power to change the world. And that power is prayer. It starts by actually putting yourself in the presence of God and believing that he's real. You know, so sadly, so often our prayer is simply coming before God and whinging. But it's a one-way conversation. You know, we're not actually believing that he's there. We're not actually believing that he wants to say something back to us. And I hear this all the time as a priest. I have people saying to me, look, my prayer life's terrible. I'm trying to pray. I'm like, what do you do? So, well, I talk to God. I tell him my problems. And every time I say, well, what does he say back? And there's this blank expression like, he speaks? Since when does he speak? But this is the thing. Like, we don't actually believe that God is awake. We don't believe that he's even alive. It's just this vague, nice concept. That's not the way that Mary was responding to Jesus here. When Mary's sitting at the feet of Jesus, she is listening because she knows that he is awake, he's alive, he's real. And she knows who she's sitting in front of. This is the living God. As a church, we've got to come back to this. We've got to come back to this place where we actually realize this is not a game. Yeah, this is not a fairy tale. If you think it is, don't waste your time with it. You know, if God is actually real, if God has actually loved us so much that he has become human, that he has died on the cross for us, we need to realize that he's trying to say something through that. He's trying to say that he's actually close, that he actually cares, that he actually listens, and that he actually wants you to take part in the salvation of the world. You know, this is the confusing bit about what Paul's saying here. He says, I'm trying to make up for what was lacking in the sufferings of Christ. And people always look at this and say, well, how could there be anything lacking in the sufferings of Christ? Surely when Christ died upon the cross, that was everything. But what Paul's trying to point out here is that we are the body of Christ. We're not spectators here. You know, there are no spectators in the church. You are part of Christ. In your baptism, you've been anointed to be him in the world. There are so many people in the world who say, look, if I met Jesus, I would believe. If Jesus came down right here and stood in front of me, I would believe in him. Really what they're asking for is that you would be him and reveal the face of Christ to them. You know, that you would actually take up your baptismal calling and reveal the glory of God. That can only happen if you encounter him first. You know, if you actually put yourself in prayer and meet the living God, actually allow the truth of that to transform your life. You know, we can spend so much time shaking our heads at the state of the world, but at some point we need to take up the calling of our baptism and realize that we're the only thing that God's got in this world. He hasn't got many other people. You know, he needs us to be able to stand in the gap and start fighting on behalf of the world. Fighting really seriously in prayer. But also actually taking up, as Paul says, the sufferings of our life. Instead of running away from them, actually saying, okay, God, I'm hungry. I'm making this a prayer for my cousin, my brother, my sister. You know, if there's trouble in your marriage, actually start realizing, well, let's fight for this. You know, instead of just running away and spending more time in front of the television to escape from the pain of it, bring yourself before the Lord in prayer. You know, this church is open almost all the time, the whole week. But it's empty most of the week. You know, place yourself before the Lord. And even here, as we come to the Eucharist, once again, to realize the power of what we're experiencing here. Because that pain and that blockage might just be in your own life. You might look at yourself and think, I can't do this. There is so much sin I can't overcome. There is so much shame in my past that I can't get rid of. You're about to receive the living God into you. Surely that does something. You know, if somehow we were to capture the sun, as huge as it is and as powerful as it is, and place it inside of you, you would expect something to change. You'd probably be vaporized in a second. Okay? There would be transformation that takes place, not a pleasant one. And yet we receive the Eucharist and nothing happens. Why is that? Is it because God's asleep or because we are? You know, if we as Catholics actually understood what is in our midst and we actively invited that power into our lives, I can guarantee you will experience change in your life dramatically. You know, if you invite this power into your areas which need healing of relationships, freedom from sin, healing from addictions. If you actually have the courage to allow God in, he will work. You know, just as Mary and Martha invited Jesus into their house, we are about to invite him into our house. Allow him to do something. You know, so often we end up inviting him into the house, but we bind his hands and his feet and we gag him so that he can't say anything. Let's give him freedom to do what he wants to do.